Welcome to the High Stakes Fantasy Network Podcast, brought to you by PlayNFC.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the High Stakes Fantasy Network Podcast during our NFBC Champions Podcast Week. I'm Greg Ambrosius. I'm going to be your host tonight, and we have a special guest on the show. He is Drew Forte, the winner of our 2023 NFBC RotoWire Online Championship. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks so much for having me. Excited to talk about the season that was.
So when I say that you are the RotoWire Online defending champion, how does that sound to you today, a couple months after the season?
I mean, it's like a dream come true. I think anybody who plays in one of these big overall contests that you guys host, and you guys do a great job of putting on these events, I think it's a dream for anybody to see their name at the top at the end of the season. And I was very fortunate that it was myself this year. And so it just felt great. And I still can't believe it.
All right, let's get to the heart of the matter here. You won $150,000 last year for that online championship title. How great was winning that much money at your young age, and do you have any of the money left?
Yeah, it's obviously it's a big purse. It's a lot of money. I guess I have just about all of it left. I think afterwards I have donated some to charity, of course. I've invested a lot. And then my fiance, so we got engaged in July. I think
nice. She's
been so awesome to me this whole season and, dealing with me on Sunday nights, giving my time. So we're going to take a trip to Italy next year with some of the money. And obviously we're going to get married. So some of the money will go towards a wedding and towards a honeymoon. So I definitely have it. I'll definitely splurge a little bit, but make sure I invest it and, maybe eventually put some money on a house down payment down the road.
Very good. Glad we could help out there, but you did all the work. So definitely you deserve all of that. All right. So let's talk about your age. I interviewed Lucas Bieri last night, and he's 30 years old. I told him he's probably one of the youngest, if not the youngest, national champion we've ever had. You are 30 years old as well. I don't know what your birth dates are as far as the months, but both of you guys are really the youngest national champions I can remember in the NFBC. You beat over 2,400 teams for the RotoWire Online Championship. How are you young kids beating all these seasoned veterans?
Yeah, Greg. So when I saw you put this in the outline, I really gave it some thought. So here's what I think, and I won't speak for Lucas, but I think one of the things is I don't have kids. And eventually I do want kids and, love to have them down the road. But on Sundays, if I want to spend 10 hours doing fab, I don't have another human being that I'm responsible for. So I have that extra time. So I think that's part of it, is I just have some more free time that I can devote to fantasy and to research and lineup setting. And so I'm kind of in my prime in that sense. And so I know eventually I won't have all that time. I'll have kids and I'll have more responsibilities, but I'm trying to take advantage of it. So I think that potentially could be one thing why saw so much success from younger people this year.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, let's get back to the matter. How does it feel to beat 2,459 other teams for this title? I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. I think you would know every year the contests grow and there's more teams and there's more knowledge, and the other teams in the top were incredible teams. And I feel like the standings were so close, and I would just look at the stats and you could just, the difference in the standings is probably decided by just who was started and who was benched amongst our team. So there's a lot of great teams, out there. It's a great competition, and you guys put on a great contest that you draw some of the best players in the world too. So.
Yep, definitely. All right. I was saying before, for a long time, our veterans were saying, when are you going to bring in new blood? When are you going to bring in younger guys? We are the same guys in New York, the same guys in Las Vegas. And, fantasy football, we always did get newer people. But fantasy baseball is a tougher sport to bring in even the younger people, right? But in the last 3 to 4 years, I have been amazed. I mean, many of the podcasts out there are younger guys right now, right? Talking to you guys. Did DFS bring, you think, people in, or do you think it's the entry points that you started out and then grew up? Or, what is with the younger sports fans suddenly coming into the fantasy baseball market?
Sure. So I've actually never played DFS. I wonder if sports betting, the the legalization across a lot more states and people being able to win these big prizes. And then you look at a place like the NFBC, you can win 150,000, you can win 200,000 with, you know, different entry points of price ranges. So I think that's attractive of just being able to, hey, here's an environment that I, you know, sports and figuring out how to win those, you know, big prizes. And also, like you said, I think the different entry points are helpful. I think a lot of us who start at smaller entry points for fantasy leagues, and it's really nice to get started in the NFBC and what's usually a new format for most people at that smaller entry point, entry fee point.
Yep, definitely. All right, let's talk about how you got started in fantasy baseball. I talked to Lucas last night. In middle school, he got into a church fantasy baseball league and kind of got attached. And then I kind of wonder, like, do you quit in college? Did you start in college? How'd you start fantasy baseball?
I always remember. I started 2006. Played a Yahoo League with some of my friends. I still play in that league. It's a head-to-head league, 12 teams now. That's how I first found out about fantasy baseball. And then from there, I've merged into, you know, other leagues. I run a league of kids from college. I still played throughout college. I've never stopped playing. I've played every single year since 2006. And then some more advanced home leagues. And then I found out about the NFBC, and I probably heard about it in 2017. The RotoWire podcast, Jeff Erickson and Scott Gensed talked about the main event and the wild west of the online championship. And I was like, I think I need to check this out. And then eventually that's how I got into playing the NFBC.
Well, that's pretty interesting because that's what Lucas said to me offline as well, that he first started listening to Jeff and Scott. You know, a lot of people listen to Jeff and Chris List when they're on SiriusXM and got interested in it as well. I mean, these guys are not just our partners, but they are into this. They're really players. Jeff is certainly, and Scott for sure. So very interesting as well. All right. So I looked at your history in the NFBC. You started with us in 2019. You did a $250 satellite league. Then you did one $50 league in 2020, four pay leagues in 2021. You won your only online championship league title before last year in 2021, and you finished 106th overall. So kind of talk about the progression, the confidence. We always say it takes a couple of years to get used to our fab, the format, all of that stuff. Talk about that progression for you.
Sure. So I'm pretty methodical. So I think when I started out in 2019, I always had a vision for myself of how I wanted to progress from one league to multiple leagues and up the stakes. And I think like most people, I played that league in 2019 and I did not do very well. I finished middle of the pack. I'll never forget the first week of Fab. It was used to Fab running at midnight. And so it's like, oh, I've got all night, whatever. I think at 9:55, I checked the website. I was like, oh, 10 Eastern Fab. I immediately got a couple moves in. So like most people, that first year is a big learning curve. And then I was going to probably play in an online championship in 2020. But when the pandemic came, because I was so new to the environment, I didn't want the short season to kind of cloud my thinking or my thought, draft or fab process. So I had been in 150, 12 team DC, draft and hold format contest. And then I just didn't do any more leagues until 2021. And then that was the progression. I was like, start with one OC, see how I do. And then build on. I did two, 2022, I did a couple. And then this year I had three and build on more teams. So that's kind of how I built my progression. And it seems to have worked out for me.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, your progression is a perfect model for what we try to tell people. I mean, you did only three NFBC leagues in 2022, but one of them was one of those $50 RotoWire qualifiers, right? And you won it, winning a free 2023 online championship entry. Now, I don't know if that was the one that won the national title, but we always say $50 for a chance to win $150,000. You're the model for what that possibly can happen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it probably was because this was the winning team this year was the first OC that I drafted. So it probably was the one that I used the credit for. And I think that's what's great about the NFBC is that you can turn that a $50 entry into a $350 entry, which it turns into a $150,000 prize. And that's what I enjoy about those smaller $50 online qualifiers. You have the Gladiators now. It's a it's a great way just to get back into drafting, to learn the player pool, to test your ranks, and to build yourself up for when you have those bigger money leagues later in the season.
Absolutely. I mean, those qualifiers are great. We have them for the main event qualifiers as well. Those are 125. Basically, they're winner take all. But again, it's low start out, and you got a chance to really get into one of our bigger events. So people should check out our qualifiers. All right. So you did three RotoWire online championship teams last year. Like you said, you got the one free one. I know you bought two more after that. You won two league titles, and you finished second in the other one. You finish first overall, 13th overall. I mean, you, that first place team, you led from week 14 on, basically three full months. Why do you think you had so much success last year? And what did you learn from that success last year?
Yeah. So I think part of the reason I had so much success this year is because I did not have success last year. And last year I finished third in both online championships.
Right.
As you know, coming in third place in the online championships gets you nothing.
Gets you nothing.
And I took that and I knew I could do better. And so I, after last year, I looked at my process and when I got started on prep. So this past year, I got started earlier than I did. And I really nailed my process. We talked about it takes a couple of years to really nail down the NFBC and the format and the fab, and the draft software is great, but just getting used to it. And I really nailed how I was going to evaluate players, my draft pool, my draft setup, what resources I have while I draft, what do I have up on my screens while I'm drafting, my fab process, my in-team tracking. It just came, all seemed to come together for me. And it, you know, you have that moment where you could see, you know, have a clear sight throughout the forest, right? You see between the trees. And it just kind of all came together for me. And I think learning from last year what I did wrong, applying it and fixing it and figuring out how to get better for this year is how I was able to turn it around so quickly.
We talk about this all the time. I mean, NFBC Hall of Famer Dave Potts, I think he entered in 2009. He said, I just got my ass kicked. I was like, I thought I knew something. Came back the next year, thought I knew something, still got kicked, you know? By like the third year, he wins the, it was 125,000 main event at that time. But I mean, it took him 2-3 years to really get up to speed. And that's not uncommon. And I'm not saying that to scare people from joining the NFBC, because again, there are ways to learn at small price points, if you will. You don't have to jump into the main event right away. But there is a learning process, and that's not a bad thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with anything, it takes time. And you have to know that going in, that the level of competition is probably a bit different than some of the home leagues you may be used to. And, you know, everything is new and it does take time. And I think if you're dedicated and you put in the work, that you can bump up that curve a little bit, but it does take a couple of years just to get familiar with everything. And it just like anything that you try new, it takes time and it takes effort to get really good at it.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Let's talk about the thrill of those final weeks with two teams in the top 20, one team really at the top, like I said, for the last 3 months of the season. I ask people all the time, is that a great feeling or is that a terrible feeling where you're just thinking, you know, the floor could fall out for me and this would be a terrible finish for me, or one that I would never forget? What was that feeling down the stretch there with those two teams?
I mean, it was a combination of everything you said. It was joy. It was nerves knowing that, hey, I've been in first for so long, the bottom could fall out at any time. But just doing everything that I could, I worked extra hard those last few weeks just to go through my whole process. I promised myself that I was going to go all out to win. I wasn't going to give myself any regrets at the end of the season. And, you know, just to make sure to enjoy it, to soak it in. It's an incredible journey. It's a journey that starts, you know, back in December for me and through October, to just enjoy the process and, you know, really just see my many hours and meticulous detail pay off. And it was just great down the stretch. I got a lot of congratulations. A lot of people reach out to me congratulating on the win and wanted to hear my story. It was a really proud moment for me.
Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, we got a great community, and they don't want to get beat by you, but when they do, they acknowledge, you know, a good player. And I want to tell you about a good player. That team that won the $150,000 grand prize finished with 117.5 league points, folks. This is a 12-team league, all right? He won the $1,400 league prize, but 117.5 out of 120 possible points, 2.5 points away from a perfect season. I mean, again, as you hear this right now, I can see the smile on your face, but what a proud moment, right?
Yeah, it just, I just couldn't believe it. Just like I said, from the draft process throughout the season to, you know, things just seem to align for me. And, you know, there's obviously luck involved. You know, just some things we'll talk later about draft picks or whatnot. But, you know, there was a couple guys I really liked, Drew Rasmussen and Jeffrey Springs. And in this draft, I was prepared to take them. They hadn't been pushed up in ADP yet, and I was ready to get both of them. I liked them a lot, and they both got taken ahead of where I wanted to take them. And who were my backup options? It was Pablo Lopez and Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah,
so sometimes it just kind of works out. It's a combination of, you know, so yeah. just thrilled. It's incredible to keep talking about it.
Yeah, it's fabulous. All right. You also finished second in a 125 satellite league. You were third in the Gladiator League, sixth in a 150 satellite league. So you did six leagues last year. You cashed in five of them. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. So the 38 OC that came in second and a couple of these satellite leagues, I partnered for the first time with somebody, Jason Perkins, who's also a really great NFBC player. And we had really great success our first year partnering together, and we had a positive ROI. So really looking forward to partnering again with him, building off our success for this year and growing the number of leagues that we're in. So again, like I said, the process kind of came together, and I think it shows by the success that I had individually and also with Jason.
Well, you said your fiance is an accountant, so she should be telling you that the more you spend with us, the more you give less to the government, all right, just so you know.
Yes, Greg, every year I've spent more and more on MFBC entries, and I think that will continue for today.
Hey, you drafted from the eighth spot in that championship league, okay? Started out with Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts. You then added Matt Olson, Kevin Gausman, Felix Bautista in the first seven rounds. I mean, talk about that start, and I want to hear you talk about starting out with three hitters, because you can do that in a 12-teamer, but a lot of times people want to get at least one starting pitcher there. Do you think, like, you could do that again this year where you'd wait for a starting pitcher in the fourth round and still have the success?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think every year is a new year, and for me, part of my draft process, I also added Shane McClanahan was in there also. So I think every year I like to look at options across around. So I'll go through and I'll put together, you know, just in different rounds, the players that I want to target and kind of see, you know, what rounds I like certain hitters, what rounds I like certain pitchers, and kind of, you know, build my draft board from the back up, maybe from like round 12 up to round one. And it just so happened that going through that process and looking at the options of the people I want, just the pitchers that I seem to like was just like Kevin Gausman. I liked McClanahan. I could get them a little bit later. And so that allowed me to go a little bit hitter heavy earlier in the rounds, knowing that I wasn't losing out on my pitching, my pitching targets later. And I think that helped me keep balance where, okay, I knew I was going to take some hitters early, but then I was going to get those pitchers later. I filled in with a closer there. So I came out of the first seven or eight rounds with some good balance between hitters, pitchers, good stat balance. I think that's important because the more balance you build earlier, then later you can get those perceived values that the draft room gives you, and it allows you to take some more chances.
Well, why don't you talk about that a little bit? That's interesting that you say you kind of look at round 12, you kind of know who might be available there, and you kind of work your way up. I mean, most people, they just concentrate on round one and two, right? They're like, I'm getting this guy at six, and I'm getting this guy in round two, and then I'm going to figure it out after that.
Yeah, so I think that's what's great about fantasy baseball, and we'll talk a little bit about later, is that, you know, you need your draft, your foundational pieces to do well, but you also have to hit on a couple of, league winners, quote unquote, later, you know, with those chances. And so I think it's important. That's where you find the value. That's where you find the guys who are projected to earn $1 or $2 who end up being, you know, the $20 or $25 players. And that really vaults you from being a league winner to an overall winner. You hit on the Pablo Lopez's, the Nate Eovaldi's, the Yandy right. Diaz, those guys who really out earn their draft costs. So the first couple rounds are important because you want those foundational players who are going to really give you a huge boost, Otani, Betts, Matt Olson. But you need the guys in the later part of the draft. You need at least some of them to really come through and provide some extra value for your team.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I see some people at the live events when they get sniped, like you said, you got sniped on Rasmussen and Springs, you know, they kind of lose it, right? They're like, I knew I was going to get one of those two guys and they both got sniped. Now what the hell am I going to do? But you seem like you've got a little bit of a backup plan when that stuff happens, right?
Yeah, I think it's like the phrase, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And I think you have to. And I think you have to know that you should go into a draft knowing you're playing with other smart people who may have similar thought processes as you, same draft targets, and to be prepared and to have those options. Say, okay, if this guy gets taken, you know, I have B, C, D left. And you know, sometimes it works out. Sometimes the best draft picks are the ones you don't make or can't make. And you get left with somebody who turns in an awesome season that wasn't the initial A target for you.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Let's talk about some of those great values you had on that championship team again. William Contreras in round 10. Hell, I'm a Brewers fan. I didn't see this coming. I mean, he was fabulous. He was just fabulous. Pablo Lopez in round 13. I love Pablo Lopez. And when I looked at his stats at the end of the year, I was like, holy cow, I didn't even realize he struck out that many people, right? Eovaldi in round 20. Think about that. Round 10, round 13, round 20. A lot of times I say the championship can be won in rounds 10 through 20, certainly in a 15-teamer. That's where people think, oh, if I hit a dart throw in round 23. No, it's that 10 through 20 where really those foundation pieces are found unexpectedly, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. Again, that's where the draft dollar, projection kind of evens out, and that's where you're really looking for those guys who can exceed their draft costs. And when we talk about some of these players, William Contreras, he was part of a group of catchers I liked, and he happened to fall in this draft, and he was the one who I was able to get. And like you, I had no idea he was going to be the number one catcher. I would have drafted him more places, but he had an incredible season. He got more playing time than projected, and he was great hitting the top of the Brewers lineup. And then, Pablo Lopez and Nate Eovaldi were just, talented players that I just saw a bit of an inefficiency with in ADP. And, Pablo Lopez was a guy that was, the second target for me, and just got other guys got picked, and it happened to work out really well for me that he had an incredible season. He stayed healthy.
Beautiful. Yeah. You got some good breaks then. All right. Let's talk about Fab, because again, you said, Sundays you're able to spend time there, but it's tough. And people realize that, that's why our non-Fab leagues take off like the draft champions. But how do you prep for Fab each week? And with the six teams that you did have, I mean, how many hours does it take you for on Sundays?
First of all, I love Fab. I think Fab is incredible. It's like a new draft. It's the only time you get a chance to improve your team, and you get to do it 26 times a year. Yep. You only get to draft once. You do Fab 26 times as many times. Mm-hmm. And so I think when I look at Fab, I my goal of this year is to be more efficient with my time and to get better at how long it takes me, because it can take me a long time to go through my whole process. But like most people, I like to set my team, see for the next week where my holes are, if I have any injuries, where I need to cover, if I have batters with only two games in Monday to Thursday, four games, if I got which pitchers I want to use. I try to set my lineup before I even look at who's available. And then after that, there's a couple key resources I use. So like most people, I use Vlad's FTN. A Fab guide. I think it's incredible. It's extremely comprehensive, and it sets a good guideline of expected bid prices. I also like to use the Razzball Streaminator, another popular resource, again, just to look at those 1 to 2 week value plays, those small dollar bids. I think a lot of people know you talked about it with Lucas about churning in Fab and constantly turning over the bottom part of your team. And so the Streaminator helps that. And I like to use the RotoWire pitching grid. Again, another pretty commonly used, very valuable resource. It just shows all of the upcoming matchups and guys that I want to target. And it's a really great view, and it's updated constantly. So I have real faith in that what they're saying is the matchups are what they're going to be.
Yeah, like I said to Lucas, I mean, I love to look at the championship rosters at the end of the year. I list all the drafts, and then I list all your fab. And when I go through some of these championship rosters, it just amazes me how efficient you guys, as far as, again, 10 conditional bids or 12 conditional bids with six guys each week or four guys, five guys. I never turned over my teams like that before. Like I said, I'm one of these goofy, bad players who are like, I drafted him, he's going to come around, and he's going to be on my team. But that's not how you can win in high stakes anymore, right? And you found out, too, you need to churn through and take some shots. And if they don't pan out, take another shot next week.
Yeah, agree, totally. Some of them won't work out, but if you take more of those chances and, you know, you're pretty conscientious with how you spend your fab, you can make it go a long way and you can take more shots on people. And eventually your hope is that one of those guys turns into a real difference maker, and some of them won't, but that's okay. You're not going to hit on everything, and you're just going to keep moving, keep turning. No, eventually you're going to find somebody that hits.
Yep, definitely. All right, let's look at some of your fab pickups from last year on this championship team. James Outman on April 2nd for 40, pretty darn good. Chris Sale for 252 on April 23rd. Spencer Steer for 16 on May 14th. Matt McLean for 55 on May 21st. So you were aggressive early on. And Grayson Rodriguez for $21 on June 18th. Talk a little bit about them. Which of those guys really did help you out?
Yeah, I mean, Matt McLean obviously is the big one. Also, Hassan Kim was on here. I added him for like $16, and he was incredible for me around the same time. And Jake McCarthy. So my team was the one area it struggled early on with was stolen bases, and I kind of identified that early as an area that my team was not performing well in and wasn't going to perform well for the future. And so adding McLean, Hassan Kim, and Jake McCarthy, and obviously I didn't have them at the beginning of the year, so I didn't have the bad Jake McCarthy. I got all the good stolen base stats, really propelled me. And so those guys were key for me. And then an under the radar fab pickup for me was Tanner Scott in September. So I had Felix Bautista as a closer, and I lost him, and I was kind of freaking out a little bit because not a lot of saves had come into the league. And when I saw that the Marlins were turning to him as a closer, it lined up perfectly when Bautista was out, and I knew I needed to have him. And he was incredible for me in September and really kept my team at the top because of just all the saves and great ratios and strikeouts that he accumulated in that last month.
Every week in fab is important, folks. Every week in fab, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, you can't miss a week. You have to put in the same effort every time. Right. And there's obviously more responsibilities. There's family things. There's, you know, things for your kids and obligations that are above fantasy baseball. But you have to try to fit it in around those or work with a partner who can help you on those weeks where you can't spend all the time that you need to. So you just can't keep a week off if you want to compete with the best guys in the business.
Yep, definitely. All right, you mostly dabbled in 12-team leagues. I know you've signed up for a couple Gladiator leagues as well right now. Any interest? What's your thoughts between 12 and 15 teams first?
I love the 12-team format. It fits my skill set well. It's what I grew up playing, so I have a comfortability with it. And I just love the balance between the draft and fab that, you know, you need a strong draft, but you also have to do well in fab to perform because of the talent that's available on the waiver wire. So I just love the 12-team leagues.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Any interest in the main event of 2024, which is the 15-team format?
Main event, I'm not I don't know. Maybe one day. I'm not putting it off, off my radar. But I just love the 12-team formats. And I think, as scary as it sounds, I think there's room for me to improve and get better at my process. I made a lot of mistakes this year, and so it's something I'm looking back and figuring out how to correct those. So I'm looking forward to just continuing my process and getting even better at the 12-team formats, if that can make sense. But I know I have room to grow there. So I just like the 12 teams so much.
Cool. Well, we used to be in New York. We were in New York City for 20 straight years. We are not going to host our live events. We'd love to have you at a live event. If you ever think about it, March Madness in Las Vegas, you're more than welcome to join us.
Yeah, I do have plans to go to Vegas this year for the first time. I've been pulled in. It just seems incredible. Everybody who goes and talks about how unbelievable an experience it is and what great events that you guys put on. So I'm really looking forward to going, getting a chance to meet everybody. It'll be my first NFBC or even fantasy baseball conference environment, live conference environment. So just looking forward to meeting everybody and getting to experience the energy and everything that is about the live events. For the
awesome.
NFBC.
Well, yeah. We do have live $750 RotoWire Online Championships out there on Friday. And then on Saturday, before the main event, you are more than welcome to be there. We have a stage of champions. We bring all of our national champions up there from past years, last year, and all past years, all of our Hall of Famers. And we have a ballroom of about 45,000 square feet. So we'll have 8 or 9 main events going at once with the stage of champions. So if you're out there, you're getting on the stage of champions, and we may have to have you give a speech even, all right?
Sounds good, Greg. I'm really looking forward to it. So
that would be awesome.
And obviously lines up perfectly. March Madness also, the first round. So it sounds like a great time, and I'm very excited.
Awesome. All right, let's talk about our ADPs, because you had just mentioned that. You kind of were looking at the ADPs. You know where certain guys are going. Obviously, when they get to the live events, they get jumped or whatever, but how important are our ADPs? I mean, we used to not have them available for people, and then we decided, let's just put this information out here. It's great content, and I really think that a lot of people use our ADPs.
Yeah, I think that was a smart decision by you guys, because I think across all the podcasts, all the content, your ADPs is what everybody references, because they're of such high quality and there's a lot of leagues. So it's a high sample size for all the great content creators to reference. Mm-hmm. And I think where I find the ADPs useful is the buy, no buy. So it just sets the marker of, do I want to pay this price? Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's the ADP or the average auction value, do I want to pay this price for this player or not?
Yeah.
And it's a good guide, and every draft is different. And, you know, you have some rooms that these guys get pushed up, crazy beyond, and some drafts where they fall below their ADP. So you always have to be able to adjust and adapt to your draft's, nuances. But I think those ADPs are helpful for just deciding if you're in or out on a player.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's talk about KDS in a 12-team league. Do you have a preference? I mean, I'm sure everyone wants one this year if they can get Acuna. But if you are doing your KDS now, do you just let it ride, or do you got a certain spot you're looking at?
Yeah. This year, I haven't dove in. First Gladiator is for January. But I generally, the way I'll look at KDS is what we talked about earlier, by mapping out mm-hmm. draft targets at different points in the draft. So I'll look at my draft targets if I drafted 1 through 4 in the middle of the draft, and then 9 through 12, and kind of work my way backwards and see which team build I like better, which of my targets are falling into a cluster that a certain draft position is more likely to take them at. So that's kind of how I approach it. And then, you leave it up to the luck of the NFBC gods that you get your preferred KDS spot. That's how I do my strategy. I don't let one player dictate a KDS.
Do you play other fantasy sports, football or basketball, at all?
No, I play fantasy football. I used to, but I stopped playing about 7 years ago. I love fantasy baseball so much. I love the grind.
Yeah.
I love everything about the long season. And one of my favorite things is when I tell people that I play fantasy baseball, like, how do you do it? Like, that takes so much time. I love it. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I especially enjoy that no one player makes your team. You talked about, hey, you have to hit on draft picks, 11 to 20th rounds who make your team. It's, my team, Brian Slack and Dylan White, like, neither of us had Ronald Acuna. He had this probably mm-hmm. one of the most amazing fantasy baseball seasons ever. And neither one of us had him on our teams. And we still were able to, achieve, winning overall titles. So, and also injuries, right? My team, I had Otani, I lost injury. Bautista injury, McClanahan injury, a bunch of others, Evaldi, Matt McClain got hurt too. And I was still able to prevail. So all of those things is just why I love fantasy baseball so much. And I've just made it my sole focus just so I can be the best at it that I can be.
Well, like I say, that's awesome, because we were worried the younger generation didn't seem like they had the time span for a fantasy baseball. Football is just more immediate on a Sunday, lay on a couch, make your lineup. Baseball is tougher. And I think for a lot of us who have been doing this for a long time, again, I've been in this industry 34 years, I was worried that we might be dying off the fantasy baseball diehards, but it's so great to see this new influx of players that are willing to take the time and do this.
Yeah, and I think people are amazed when you tell them that you can play in a fantasy baseball league and win $150,000. Yeah. I think that's been, people are shocked. They're like, how much did you win? Yeah. And so I think that's also part of it, is it's like this incredible prize that it's, if you do this well, you put the time in, you can see real payoff.
Yeah, right. Cool. You're in New York. Are you a Yankees or a Mets fan?
I'm a Yankees fan.
Okay.
Quite excited about the trade.
Yeah.
Trade I think they had to make for Juan Soto. And so I'm excited to see what he can do in pinstripes. And hopefully they make some other moves to fortify the pitching staff and some other areas. But, I thought it was a good trade. I was excited that they pulled
it off. Yeah, I was talking to Lucas last night. His ADP, we're talking about Juan Soto, obviously, is 14. Do you think that goes up in Yankee Stadium? I mean, certainly a much better ballpark, better lineup.
Yeah, I think it's like everything. I think a lot of NFBC drafters like to react to news and push guys up, especially when they sign with the Yankees, and people will hear the short porch, see the short porch and a lefty in Yankee Stadium.
Right.
People always seem to climb to that. There's always a debate of Juan Soto if, he walks a lot and that is good for real baseball, but maybe not the best for fantasy unless you play in a league that has on base percentage in it. But I think he'll get pushed up, and then it'll be decision time of whether you want to pay that new ADP price or if you're willing to take somebody who's obviously has to replace somebody who will get pushed down. So right. If you want whoever has fallen back as results of him being pushed up.
That's the fun part of drafting, and we got 100 some days left to go. I think about 120 or so. So it should be fun. All right. Finally, you're our 15th different overall championship of the RotoWire Online Championship in 15 seasons. We've never had a repeat one, which is very difficult, but we've never even had a two-time RotoWire Online Championship. What would it mean to you if you were able to win it all again this year?
It would obviously be incredibly special. I think you could tell me, I think it would maybe put me on the path to the NFBC Hall of Fame.
Of course.
That would be for you guys to decide. So it would obviously be incredibly special. Like I said, I try to take it a week at a time, a day at a time. I'm committed to keep making my process better, figuring out how to get better, how to fix the mistakes that I made last year, and giving it my best effort. And hopefully my one of my teams is fortunate enough, or hopefully a couple of the teams are fortunate enough to compete for the overall again next year. And, hopefully I get some of the same good luck that I got this year and I'm able to elevate and pull it off. But it would be another dream come true. And we can do the same conversation again next year.
That sounds good. Well, it was great meeting you for the first time. I look forward to buying you Coronas in Las Vegas. And I guarantee you, you're going to love the camaraderie. And I mean, I hope you can talk baseball all night, because that's all those guys do out there is talk baseball at the live events. And you're going to fit in really good with everybody. So I really look forward to seeing you in Las Vegas.
Yeah, likewise, Greg. I'm really looking forward to it. I appreciate you and the team do a great job. You've got great customer service. You put on a great product. The platform is amazing. Everybody always raves about, the NFBC draft platform and just the whole software. So I'm really appreciative that I was able to find this community and able to see the success that I had. And so I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on.
All right. Thanks much. And thanks everyone for joining us. You can watch us anytime on our YouTube channel. Again, I'm going to do this again on Tuesday. I've got Matt Shepard, a veteran NFBC guy. He won the auction championship. He's going to join me Tuesday at, what time is Matt joining me? Let me see here. 6 o'clock Eastern time. So I'll promote that, but come join us and you'll watch Matt Shepard. I'm going to try to get a couple more guys. Brian Slack, if you're listening, get on this podcast with me. Damn it. You won $200,000. Let's do it. All right. All right. We'll see you later, Drew. And we'll see you in Las Vegas in March. All right.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Greg.
Thanks, everybody. All right.